This podcast contains adult themes and graphic violence. Listener discretion is advised.
A commercial-free version of this podcast is available on Patreon for $1 per month. Patreon.com/Beyond Contempt Podcast. I'm Renee, and this is Beyond Contempt True Crime. Gifts are sometimes given to celebrate wedding anniversaries. For the first 15 years, there's a symbolic gift for every year of marriage. After 15 years, gifts are traditionally given in 5-year intervals. These gifts signify that a relationship was successful for lasting. Year 5 is wood. Wood is a durable material and represents that a marriage is strong and long-lasting. The woman in this case was murdered 2 days shy of her 5th wedding anniversary. She thought she was in love, and her marriage bond was strong, but she was mistaken. You're listening to Episode 44, Simonette Mapes Cruppy. Simonette Mapes was born on September 25, 1982, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The Mapes family was well-traveled, since Simonette's father was in the Air Force, and they moved all over the United States every time there was a new military assignment. In 1988, the Mapes family arrived in Oakwood, Staten Island. They moved to Brooklyn at the Fort Hamilton base. They spent some time in Florida after Brooklyn, but 2 years later returned to New York and settled there. Simonette graduated from Fort Hamilton High School. She attended the College of Staten Island Willowbrook, where she majored in education, and completed a bachelor's degree. Simonette began her teaching career in 2006, teaching social studies at various schools in Brooklyn, some of which were in very rough sections of the city. She met her future husband, Jonathan Cruppy, outside of school they both taught at. Simonette felt hard for Jonathan, and the pair were married in 2007. They moved into a condo on Forest Hills Road in New Springville, Staten Island. Simonette took a job teaching history to high school students at the School of Classics, an academy of thinkers, writers, and performers in Brooklyn, in 2009. Jonathan also taught English at the same school. Simonette had a teacher's heart and often gave her personal time and money. She ran a girls' leadership club and founded the Fairy Godmothers Project at her school, which provided prom dresses for students who were underprivileged. 1 year at graduation, there were a few handfuls of students who could not afford to buy their caps and gowns. Simonette paid for the graduation garb out of her own pocket. Simonette was a big Disney fan. She and John would vacation at Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida, every year after their summer school session was finished. Simonette had done the same vacation for 6 summers. She also loved animals. Besides owning 2 dogs, she donated her time to the ASPCA. Simonette kept her volunteer schedule full and rounded it out by being a member of the Leukemia Foundation and a parishioner at Our Lady of City Church, Staten Island. Life was motoring along for the Mapes Cruppy household. Jonathan and Simonette were set to celebrate their 5th wedding anniversary, and they were gearing up to have children. But in the summer of 2012, they hit a few speed bumps, which revealed Jonathan had been living a dual life. Jonathan and Simonette were supposed to graduate with their master's degrees at the same time. She received a book from their college that had the names of all the students that conferred their master's degree, and John's name was missing. Simonette knew something was going on and confronted her husband. Jonathan told her that his name was missing because the school had difficulty spelling it. That was a lie. Simonette also had other doubts about her husband's honesty. She took his cell phone and looked through his call log. There was one particular number that he frequently dialed. Simonette rang the number, and a woman named Miss Pumpkin answered. She was convinced that her husband was stepping out on their marriage and diverting the money that should have gone to paying for his master's to paying for her escort services. On July 5, 2012, Simonette was found laying face down on the ground. She had been pushed down the stairs, and there were 15 stab wounds in her back and neck. She was just 2 days shy of her 5-year wedding anniversary. Jonathan told police that he ran errands in the morning. He got up at 6:45 a.m. and his wife was still sleeping. He woke Simonette up at 7:30 a.m. to tell her he was getting his car inspected that day. She asked him to pick up some of her books and session plans from school. Then he headed out the door. He spent most of his time in Brooklyn. Jonathan went to a discount theater on Atlantic Avenue to see the Broadway show Wicked, but could not find the ticket stub to provide the detectives with proof. He went to school to pick up books that his wife needed for teaching. CCTV at the school captured John picking up the books, which backed up his statement. He left school around 10:06 a.m. and texted Simonette that he was going to get his car inspected. She never texted back. Jonathan produced a receipt for $11 that showed he got the inspection. He went to 5 different stores on Pitkin Avenue to buy shoes, but he never made a purchase. He texted his wife at 11:50 a.m. before he went to Home Depot to pick up paint. She again did not text him back. He tried calling her 25 minutes later. No answer. Jonathan went to Home Depot, but changed his mind about the paint and never left his car. He drove through the Target parking lot and then went home. This was when he discovered his wife was deceased and dialed 911. The murder appeared to be a robbery that went off the rails. A few weeks prior to her murder, Simonette posted this on Facebook. Kruppi and I survived a shootout today. Thank God we are okay. I'm sure over summer school, we'll find out what the fighting was about. The Cypress Hill projects are no joke. To all the wannabe gangsters of Staten Island, who say they are from Brooklyn, but really aren't, be grateful you have what you have and stop trying to live a lifestyle you will never understand. Naturally, some of the public thought Simonette's death was gang-related retaliation for witnessing this event. The loss of their daughter devastated Simonette's parents, Teresa and John Mapes, and the media gave them a platform to speak out. Teresa wanted the public to know that everyone needed to help in catching her daughter's killer, and that this person was currently running around the city at large. John Mapes threatened that this person would pay, and they would explore every avenue until this individual was caught. The funeral was difficult for everyone, and especially for the Mapes family, because they were so tight-knit. Simonette's friends and family always warmly referred to her as Sissy. Sissy was survived by her parents, John Jr. and Teresa Mapes, and her brother, John Mapes III, and of course her husband, Jonathan Kruppi. Her uncle said that she was a sweet woman who loved life. She smiled in every photograph that she was in. They held her funeral in Willowbrook, New York, on July 10, 2012. And this included a mass at Our Lady of Pity Church, which was the church she volunteered her time at. Jonathan Kruppi's sobbing and shaking were uncontrolled, especially when he clutched a rosary in one hand and kissed 2 roses, then placed them onto his wife's casket at the cemetery. But this behavior was in stark contrast to what the Mapes family had witnessed. Right after the murder, the Mapes family asked Jonathan who could have done this to their daughter. Kruppi's answer was, "We need to get beyond this." He also immediately started dating a woman who looked strikingly like their daughter. Teresa was not allowed to go to the condo to collect any of Simonette's possessions. The temperature of the Kruppi family quickly became cold, and they cut off most communication with Teresa and John Mapes. This series of events was upsetting, but the Mapes family had faith that the detectives would get the case solved. Law enforcement quickly saw through Kruppi's alibi and home invasion story. They calculated Simonette had been killed between 2 a.m. and 7:30 a.m., not 2:20 p.m. when he dialed 911. Police believed Kruppi attempted to make the crime scene look like a home invasion. Then he drove around to different places to create his alibi. Law enforcement discovered, after Kruppi killed his wife, he spent the afternoon with his favorite sex worker, who was known as Miss Pumpkin. At 2:20 p.m., he feigned shock and distress when he saw his wife laying on the floor and dialed 911. Authorities found incriminating searches on his laptop. Additionally, school staff said Kruppi's trip to school to pick up books for his wife was not required. She already had everything she needed to teach class. 4 months after the murder of his wife, Jonathan Kruppi was arrested in November 2012. They charged him with second-degree murder and criminal weapon possession. His arrest vindicated the Mapes family. They felt like he committed the crime throughout the entire investigation. There were no signs of forced entry. His behavior was not someone who was grieving the loss of his wife. And the Mapes family believed that the crime was too brutal for it to have been randomly committed by someone else. They praised the detectives and DA for their hard work. The Google searches on Kruppi's laptop sealed the deal. How to stab somebody. How to clean up a crime scene. To use Clorox for DNA. Manners of death. Crime scene cleanup. The prosecution said Kruppi lied to his wife and put a financial strain on the couple, which harmed their relationship. He told Simonette 1 week before her death that he wouldn't be teaching that summer and didn't have a master's degree. The prosecution found evidence that Simonette had researched separations and divorces. Law enforcement believed Kruppi was unable to suffer the indignity of being revealed as a liar and fraud. He chose murder as the way out. Kruppi maintained his innocence and stuck with the home invasion story. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. Thank you to Best Fiends for sponsoring this episode of Beyond Contempt True Crime. The summer looks like it's going to be super lit. Music festivals, baseball games, barbecues, beach parties. I can't wait to have some fun. Another great way to sustain that feel-good White Claw summer party vibe is to download the puzzle game Best Fiends. Podcast listeners, let me tell you about this puzzle app. Best Fiends is endless fun, with thousands of levels to play and countless cute characters to collect. The challenging levels will keep you sharp and will help you maintain your A-game, especially if your summer plans are to party like it's 1999. Best Fiends is a fantastic game to play when I need to take a break from watching true crime shows on Netflix, like The Serpent, which, by the way, was really good. Well, up until the end, it dragged a little. More importantly, I know that you will enjoy this game. So download Best Fiends, free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Now, back to the show. Jonathan Kruppi went to trial in the summer of 2015. The prosecution did not have a murder weapon or any witnesses, but had a very strong circumstantial case, was centered around Kruppi's laptop searches and his penchant for porn and sex workers. They estimated he had spent at least $50,000 on these pay-for-play activities. The defense said that Kruppi had no blood, bruises, or bumps on his body, and this was evidence he had not been in a physical fight with his wife. They also stated that he had never been violent during their marriage. The defense emphasized that there was no murder weapon. Miss Pumpkin testified at the trial. She was working on her master's degree and no longer performed sex work. But she had been in the profession for 10 years and had paid her bills this way, and then some. She knew Jonathan Kruppi as Mike. Miss Pumpkin advertised on adult sites, which linked to her webpage and her phone number. Kruppi called her in 2009 and made an initial inquiry. Her rate was $300 per hour, and their first meeting was in the master bedroom of the condo he owned with Simonette. From 2009 to 2012, they met up for sex every 6 to 8 weeks. Sometimes he had her bring one of her friends, which would double the price. Kruppi had 3 different motels on Staten Island where they would meet up. Miss Pumpkin often had to field calls from angry significant others, but never remembered receiving a call from Simonette. Kruppi had instructed Miss Pumpkin to lie should she ever receive a call from his wife. The most egregious meetup Kruppi and Miss Pumpkin had was the afternoon right before he found his deceased wife and dialed 911. Kruppi had called Miss Pumpkin around 11 that day to set up a session. They met at the Comfort Inn at 12:40 p.m. She confirmed that his body did not have any injuries, bruises, or scratches. He did not take a shower after their time together, which was normal for their encounters. A month after Simonette was murdered, Kruppi called Miss Pumpkin again, and they started meeting for weekly 90-minute sessions in his parents' house, where he was staying. He asked Miss Pumpkin if she had heard about the murdered Brooklyn teacher and said that was his wife. Miss Pumpkin testified that Kruppi got emotional when he spoke about Simonette. The trial lasted for 5 weeks. And on July 20th, 2015, 33-year-old Jonathan Kruppi was convicted of stabbing his wife, Simonette Mapes Kruppi, to death. It only took the jury 2.5 hours to arrive at their decision, and they were certain that Simonette had confronted Kruppi about sleeping with sex workers, and that was when the murder took place. Jonathan Kruppi addressed the Mapes family in court. "My lies and infidelity should never have played out in such a public forum. I'd like to apologize to my wife's family. There's one thing I cannot apologize for. I did not kill her. I am an innocent man." Kruppi was sentenced that September and received 25 years to life. He filed an appeal in 2019. His legal team argued that the search warrants used against him to collect his electronics were illegal. They claimed that there was no probable cause, and detectives used his infidelity against him, even though he admitted to it. The court ruled against Kruppi. His earliest release date from prison is November 2037. A few months after Kruppi had been sentenced and sent to prison, he was back on the market trying to find another lady friend and posted an ad on a prison pen pal service called convictpenpal.com. "Hey ladies, are you awesome? Like I am? I'm looking for a fun, intelligent girl to stimulate my brain and possibly my heart. I'm 34 years old, Puerto Rican and Italian, and I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I'm a bit of a nerd, but that's cool now, right? I've been told that I'm really funny, adventurous, and down to earth. Oh, and that I'm handsome too, LOL. I like good books and movies. I love to laugh, and I listen to all kinds of music. I also like to dance and cook, but not together. That's messy, LOL. I'm a dog lover too. There's nothing like a furry best friend by your side, right? I'm not married, and I don't have any kids. No baby mama drama here. Being in jail sucks, but I'm an innocent man, and I'm working on my appeal. Patience is a virtue, and I've learned a lot of it in here. For now, I just want to find an interesting girl to share experiences with. Ideally, I'm looking for someone who is happy being single, but open to the possibility of a relationship with the right person. Any race, creed, or color is okay with me. Seriously, if you are tall or short, blonde or brunette, tattooed and rude, or shy and a prude, it doesn't matter to me. I'm open-minded, and I hope you are too. Take a chance and write to me soon. You won't regret it. Jonathan Kruppi, number 15A4042, Clinton Correctional Facility, P.O. Box 2001, Dannemora, New York, 12929, posted April 1st, 2016. This upset the Mapes family, and Teresa Mapes contacted the prison to get the ad taken down, because in her view, it was a slap in the face to everyone. She thought that Kruppi being on a dating site after murdering his spouse was plainly inappropriate and dangerous. This was when Teresa Mapes revealed Kruppi had abused the dogs he shared with Simonette. The veterinarian had reported to law enforcement that Kruppi had broken their Lhasa Apso's back 2 times. This was another piece of evidence that confirmed the correct individual ended up behind bars. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Beyond Contempt. Please visit beyondcontemptpodcast.com for the links to the sources and music used in this episode. Research, writing, editing, audio production, and sound design were performed by me, Renee. Thank you to new patrons, Roadkill Phil, Kayla T, and Nicole. I appreciate you. If you like the show, please leave me a positive review in Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much, everyone.